I wonder if you got an effect for me, huh? This is probably completely sacrilegious, but I've written the version of a Yes poem. And I wrote it about a friend of mine, Honor Justin, and it was his favourite poem. He was a friend of mine, and his favourite poem was The Host of the Air. This one's called The Host of the Night, alone, after Yes. While Driscoll's draw with his song, the worried look and the frown, from the dark and narrow street of drear Kilkenny town. And he saw how the streets grew dark at the coming of night tide, and he dreamed of the long-dim hair of his soon-to-be bride. And he heard as he sang and he dreamed a piper piping away, and never was piping so sad, and never was piping so gay. He saw young men and young women drinking down by the quay, with his young self among them, out of his head on a knee. He danced in a dream by the river, pure as the first light of dawn, his whole life stretched out before him, going where no one had gone. The dancers, they gathered around him. "Give us a poem," they cried. So he sang to them of their sorrow, and he sang to them of his joy. The light in their eyes grew brighter with every word that he said. A young girl brought him red wine, a young man, white speed. But the speed and the wine had a doom, for these were the hosts of the night. They lured him away from the river, and they lured him away from the light. Now he drinks in Davy Campion's, whiting his days away, while the ghosts, they gather round him. "Give us a poem," they say. So he sings to them of his sorrow, until all his tears run dry, and he sleeps out in the street at night, and the years drift slowly by. But he hears, as he sleeps and he dreams, a piper piping away, and never was piping so sad, and never was piping so gay.
Thank you, Paddy. Always a pleasure. Keep them coming. And next we have somebody, I think he's for the second time, reading here, John Tanley. Is that correct?
Yeah.
This is set in Singapore, and it's called Secretary. I used to imagine her home with a husband, indulging fantasies of betrayal, faces of suitors flitting through her brain as they coupled sometimes in front of the news, with the volume muted, light and shadow in the cave of the bedroom, the stairs to the roof padlocked by the landlord. Up there, a view of myriad bedrooms lying at night, where others lived lives quite similar to hers, the danger that someone would jump. Someone gets sued. One of those bedrooms was mine, where lizards hunted across the walls and the books kept their counsel. My body slept on the bed and dreamed of flight over cities I'd lived in, or failure to fly because of some decision not to change. I dreamed one night of being inside her, looking into her eyes, but her skin was papery, loose, a reminder that it was a dream, that you have to embrace the body of love, take a chance on being soiled by its truth.
Thank you, John. And now we have Eugene Crowley. For Danny O'Donovan, some stoning, his dog, their target. He would abstain from the horning, loading, feeling as the French did, as the children were led away to Chile.
Thank you, Eugene. And next we have Edward Adwire.
This poem is a pantomime, and it's called The Dark and the Wind. I just can't remember what youth taught me. There was an age it abandoned me in the night, when it left me for the dark and the wind, and so those lessons were forever gone. There was an age it abandoned me in the night. The things it taught me all took off as I slept, and so those lessons were forever gone. Just maybe it was a windy midwinter night. The things it taught me all took off as I slept. And no, youth left no farewell note on my pillow. Just maybe it was a windy midwinter night. Took like a thief all it had told me, and no, youth left no farewell note on my pillow. It was gone, and just age there in its place. Took like a thief all it had taught me, the night left only years to fill the gaping space. It was gone, and just age there in its place, and since they're all midwinter nights now, the night left only years to fill the gaping space. The years came and others just kept following. And since they're all midwinter nights now, I just can't remember what youth taught me. The years came and others just kept following when it left me for the dark and the wind. Thank you. Amen.
Thank you, Edward. And next we have Max Beaton.
No, she'll be back in a minute.
All right, okay. Yeah, we'll take Patricia Walsh in the meantime.
Never mind that, Cedric Cranog was on. It's so cool. Cedric Cranog. They hurriedly scrambled to the television, followed by a furtive search and remote control. When it was found, the gang sank back into regular pulse rate and set about upon being fixated by the latest edition of reality television. "Who's the recognizing anyway? He seems to know what he's doing," said John. "Who is he?" "That's Doug Tinsel, who excavates a deserted village at Portertown, County Clare last year. He takes no crap from anyone." "Who's supervising?" "Wheeler said she wouldn't go back there for love of money after last year. Frankie Murphy from Leitrim is his first job as supervisor, so the blog says. He's taking over from Wheeler this season. God knows she won't want to come back here." "Who's still there?" "Just a dwarf, the American one of the KNA and academic archaeologist. You mean Hugh O'Connell? Yeah, I hate to say it, but yes. Is he still struggling with the mattock? He's not actually doing anything. So what's new?" "You know something? I'm not surprised that they all complain about aches and pains after the first day. Tell something we don't know." "I tell you, we had a cork cut out with lads there last year. Never mind that, why is the bikini girl screaming? She knocked out a stone and uncovered nests of earwigs. She's absolutely scared of collies. He was in his element having wits to speak out. They chew to your eardrums, that's why they call them earwigs." "Relax, you don't have to eat them," said the director. "After all, this is not I'm just never to get me out of here." "I don't want to meet in Beatrice Street." "What are you actually doing now?" "Excavating a new section on the site apparently. Desodding, shovel scraping yesterday, and all absolutely shattered. You was Connell's fast Stephen back to Campbell again. As per usual." Yes.
Thank you, Patricia. And as you know, Patricia's novel was launched last Saturday, so well done.
Copies to sale if anyone wants them.
Not done, Trish. Okay, Max Creedon, if you're ready.
Sorry.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know what to write something about, John Kelly. That I wrote as soon as Fierce Fawn, I'll figure to fall back to the personal. So I'm glad to be able to write about this and walk away from it, but a lot of people are left behind in this situation, so I try to convey what it's like. Fearless Fawn. A fearless fawn of doe-eyed courage, unsuspecting, blindly stumbling. Invincible, they say, warriors all, in their perfect world of parallel converse universe. Not so for the watchers, who sit on their hands and let the slips, trips and knee-dips begin. Don't close your eyes, be Cormac. Elongated legs appear on the skyline of metal cocksides. Swing over, a body catapults clairboy. Unannounced, slings itself onto the floor in a one-legged deviation and still with powerful momentum of open, a closed chain to kinetics. Thin pounce on the 6-foot Bambi, soothe and placate under his oxter prop and buttress. Went to the bathroom and hasn't returned. Well, hello there, sailor. Will you bring someone with you next time? Magoo had blindly returned from his foray across country, dangers unseen, ignorant, blissful, stepping out blindly onto traffic-jammed roads. Not a bother. Perfect, I'm very well. Fragile and vulnerable, but the perceptive observes. Aren't they very insensitive? Nodding at blinkered, self-absorbed bulldozers. Safe now, inside the sliding door of lift aloft. Back to join the pack of fledglings, all trying their best to fly their little suffocating nest of muted sound, of pulled blinds, of whispers. Media free. Beeps, rings and buzzers. Dumbed down for the brittle senses of the hypersensitive. And watch those bottles. Keep your eye on them. One distraction and they pounce, they sweep, they choke. But no swallow. Migrated for now. No home in this little pharynx for the fluid. Only hacks splutter and tears of paroxysms. Fearless falls with no swallow to follow their sipping. Sit back, chin down, small sips swish around and down she goes. Resting now. Till another pair of legs appear. Dazed and ready for road. All a gallop groundward. Fearless fawn, dazzled by halage and strip lights. Soon, love, your forest will dissolve into a tiny amnesic mist. So I'll leave with that.
Thank you, Max. And now we have Tara, if you want to read to us. I think Tara Wandy, is it? Correct? Thank you very much.
Side impact. We decided to leave the day the baby died. Not ours, and yet a death that stunned us still. Strange how we both knew this was the end. Me in a hospital, tasked to manage the heartbreak of others. My husband passively awaiting each of my fragmented texts. Baby pronounced dead on arrival. They have to do criminal investigation and autopsy. The grandmother doesn't know the baby's dead. I hesitated to wait to enter the waiting room, unwilling to see her clutching her dead infant, afraid to intrude on her grief. Instead, listening and watching, as they pried the dead baby from its mother's arms and she queened the question, evidence? As they carried out a neatly wrapped package of hospital blue scrubs taped into a square. Who knew that it would take two policemen to carry out a dead two-month-old? I thought that was the worst of it, until they wheeled in the grandmother. Oblivious to her deed, she smiled loopily and asked about the baby. Her wails could be heard throughout the hospital when they told her. Your baby! I would never hurt your baby! I didn't mean to! Words on refrain until the police exited the mother from her own mother's care. Her grief too strong to help. No one knows exactly the cause of death, only that Caden lay on the floor, a trickle of blood and vomit running from his mouth, no visible marks to explain his slack body, and his grandmother, though there, unable to recollect his death. I arrived home spent, gratitude washing over me for my own two, and something new, an insight birthed from sorrow, a knowing deep within that nothing, ever, should intrude on instinct. I talked until my husband asked if it helped, and then just listened to my own refrain of helpless grief. Late in the night, he said there was one thing he knew. We would leave next year. I nodded with a shiver. I already knew.
Thank you for reading. Thank you. And next, all the way from the United States, Kat Lee Walt Miller.
Thank you. I only write very bad poetry, so I'm going to read something from the Painted Bride Quarterly, and I'm just going to talk to you for 1 minute. Do you mind?
No, go ahead.
I've been here for 6 weeks, and I've been so happy to be here, and all this Irish magic serendipity keeps happening, and a waiter at the Hotel Riverlea told me about this place. And I have to leave on Friday, and I'm so sad, because I would have been here every Monday, and I have to tell everybody at home about what you're doing. So if you ever find yourself in Philadelphia on a third Thursday, come to the Pen and Pencil, which is the oldest journalism club in America, what makes it probably like six. We do an improv writing competition similar to what you guys do in your first round. We do it for the whole night, and we have guest writers and all that. So anyway, Painted Bride Quarterly is founded at pbq.drexel.edu, and again, only in America. We're 42, and that makes us really, really old. We're one of the oldest literary magazines in America at 42. So I didn't think I was going to do anything, but I was asked to read something from it, and I like this poem, and I hope you do too. This is by Laura Dixon, and it's called Stephen Got Even. Stephen, crushed by a steady migraine and a collection of kidney stones, has never shed the peak of original martyrdom. St. Stephen's crown, as is well known, was broken open. Stephen means crown. His faithful namesake was murdered for speaking the truth. So our Stephen lies and faithfully avoids church. For years, he's been feeding Bible pages to his hole punch and saving the paper circles. If you cross him, our Stephen will pray for you. He'll pour his collected confetti into the air conditioning system of your car so that verse snows forth on your clothes, the floor, your hair. Much later, when you think by now it should be over, the last circles will still blow out each time you turn the ignition. This is how Stephen will stone you remotely with persistent, galling precision.
Thank you very much, Kathleen. I hope you come back, because like this is Cork. People come back to Cork. So you know about the Monday nights. So. Okay, guys, thanks very much. And then next we move on to Kieran McCartney.
If you're looking for a couple of more great nights in the week, there's a great night going on Thursday night. It's going to be plugged in a minute. But on Friday night, with Mr. Bradley, if you want to go and hear some nice original music, some poetry, in aid of the Strive Theatre, who's going to be an event called the Strive Live. That's true. But anyway, come back. Come back. This is a poem called Two Smokers in Harmony. The room is dark, shadowed and lit, and full of noise. It's raining outside. I hear myself cry. The soft click of metal, their guns. The English have come, and it's to the boat with me, and goodbye to my cousins and sisters. The road spills the rain, I says I'll miss you. And I awake in darkness, but hear the rumble on the waves. It's not that there's more light. Our eyes have adjusted to your caves. And the peeps on 7th Avenue say the darkness means New York. To Adam Clayton Powell from the silk streets of Cork. So smoke on the steps in Harlem as the night comes darkening and the passing hats come hearkening. Look at this, Nick, half a patty at best. Take him to the station, run a little test. And say further on your travels, copper, come across a kite, flickering between your gaze and the light, flown by a man who tells you he's Irish. Good evening, sir. How's it going? What are you doing out here on a night like this? I'm chilling with my dog. He's taking a piss. We'll leave you two to it, sir. My grandma was Irish. Kathleen Ní Houlihan, first wife of Thomas O'Houlihan. How nice. Well, the pissing dog's owner, our own kite-flying stoner, friend and pride of his favorite little rock. Now, when his granddad's old man was a three-year-old, he wasn't paid a visit in the night by anything but a bronze lock and soft light. And this must have been back when he was one, saying, "You fight for your country, son, you do it till it's done."
Thank you, Kira. Next, we have a bit of music, I believe. Is Sandra McShee here somewhere?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you need to sit down, Sandra?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's me who's putting on the gig in the train lane on Thursday at 7:30 for the Cork Life Centre. It's a school, it's a centre for kids that have fallen through the cracks in mainstream education, and it really needs to be said. The government don't care. So.
Yep.
Okay.
So folks in reason, them up on high when they told you so, do they tell you when you're breathing a breath? I play the part in the big gallo, I don't play the part of a leader. Upon the board there I take notes and I'm staring out the window. I did rise with the devil's hair, the golden was evil. Sister cat, a leather strap, she smacked into me what down, you're stuck here, you don't even know. The world that that child grow up in is gonna be a different one. And when you're killing imagination, your methods no longer work. They're making me to say a Hail Mary's, they taught you to be a fool. They're blaming you as if they're walking to school. They just don't wanna go. I play the part in the piccolo. I don't play for the leader. From the fourth there I'm taking notes and I'm staring at history books, I just don't want to know. An old paradigm you're stuck in, you don't even know. The world that I child I'll go up there, it's gonna be a different world. And when you're killing imagination, your method's no longer war. Then beg your knee and say your Hail Marys. They taught you to be a fool. Can't blame the youth for barking school. They just wanna go.
Thank you, Sandra. And now to end the evening, last but not least, Christy Barker.
Would you always pick me when you want to hear about it? I was wondering, because I can't read this, I spent the weekend writing it. But then Rasheen mentioned squatting in London, and I got all kind of nostalgic. The sound of London, I get nostalgic at the sound of squatting. I suppose I should say to our American friends what squatting is. Basically, it involves finding an empty property, breaking into it illegally, and living there for as long as you can. Preferably one with a roof, maybe a couple of doors. I never squatted in Camden. I lived in Camden, but I squatted in West Hampstead. So instead of reading the poem I'm going to read the one I'm going to read instead, which is my collection now of the poems. And we'll abandon the other plan, we'll do that another time, because as I say, I got nostalgia for squats. And this too is called the squats. Some people, when in London, wasted money paying rent, which they worked all hours in slavery to pay, but those whom I knew well implied alternative intent, and we found to our great joy in we'd see a place with shutters and an air of some neglect, ideally convenient to the shops, and steal around in darkness when no neighbours would suspect, and leave a man on lookout for the cops. Finnegan brought a crowbar and Murphy had a pliers. Jerry Mayo would unlatch the window panes. Somerville and Gannon were adept at fusing wires, and Burke and Sharkey knew their water mains. This is all true, by the way. It is. Just ask the cops in London. In a way so called eccentric, we'd wire up the electrics and make the place majestic before long. But it was very far from slumming once we'd sorted out the plumbing and we'd allocate the rooms as we went on. We'd clean the place without a trace and make ourselves a living space, and anyone we found were sound could call and crash or hang around. We'd paint the walls and wash the halls and check the floorboards. Floorboards for pitfalls, we'd men from Galway and from Yall and gals from Cork and Donegal. We'd accidents that sometimes hurt, and now and then someone gave birth. The gyros coming through the door and drunks and scrumps around the floor. We welcomed whiskey, beer and whores, but kicked out infiltrating boars or anyone who snored. We positives and negatives, help out yourselves and relatives. We found it most imperative to greet a friend or tree who had arrived at duty free. And furthermore, who would decree to dispense it liberally. We had our fights and kept our rights. We went to work on building sites. We stole the darkness from the nights and got ourselves as high as kites. While sipping pints and smoking joints, steadfast smiling and whatnot, hanging on to what we got. A golden life in a rainbow pot, what we call a squat. I remember at a party for Murphy's going away, three Jamaican men came calling to the door. We have no booze upon us, man. We have gone, Joe. Is that okay? So we sent them on their way to get some more. A young girl in the kitchen had her arms around a black. She said, have you ever kissed a woman from Kentuck? His reply was, no, not I, but it sounds a mighty crack, and it must have been for next to his work. Then a copper on the beat heard an eyes from down the street and came running to investigate the fuss. Someone handed him a can and said, there you go, my man. Next day, of course, he quit the force for us. There were joyful days in London when home was in the squats. No bigot spills or bailiffs were allowed. We didn't have much money, but good times we had lots. And no exile would be lonely in that crowd. Yeah, freedom days in London, looking catcher in the eye, with our jackboot fools and rules and regulations. But it was she who got evicted, and as Maggie wept goodbye, the squatters headed home for celebrations. Years flew by, and some guys found new ways to live their life. Some beat the States or Germany, and others settled for a wife. One or two were led, I heard, died young and tired with nothing but a big smile on their face. But they are by years of squatting.